Welcome to Secrets of Success podcast. I'm your host, Ken Keyes. And man, we have an exciting show today with two very special guests, with Jan and Alan. And I'll get into some more details as far as introducing them in a moment. But I had a chance and an opportunity to meet Jan over 10 years ago. And as a company, we've had the opportunity to use her work, attracting perfect customer, for over 10 years with our associates, with other individuals, and personally. But now she has partnered with Alan to write a new book called Being Attraction, What Love Has to Do with Business and Marketing. So I just want to welcome both of you to the show.
Hi, Ken. Thank you.
Hi, Ken. Thank you.
Great to be here.
Yes.
So just tell us a little bit about who Jan and Alan are. You know what? And because it's ladies first, Alan, not that I am a chauvinist in any way, just Jan, just give us a little bit of your background so the listeners know who you are. And then, Alan, you just fallen in behind. And just so give us an orientation of who you are and just what you bring to the show.
Sure, that'd be great.
Well, I'm a 13-year-old business owner. I'm happy to say.
Yeah.
I said that sounds funny,
that's
doesn't
perfect.
It? I'm 13 years old. Perfect Customer is celebrating their 13th anniversary this month. How's that? And it was a business that I was near and dear to my heart, and what I wanted was to share with business owners how they could really have what they wanted. They could have a business that they love. They could be paid for who they are being, and they could follow their dreams in a way that they didn't have to sacrifice anything. They could have their relationships be great. They could have their business be great. They could follow their passions. And I'm in the good company of being able to attract perfect customers like you, Ken. And believe it or not, Alan was at one time a perfect customer for me.
And you obviously did an upgrade.
I did a, yes, that's the next course after attracting perfect. Unfortunately, there's only a spot for one in that position, and he's now my business partner and my beautiful husband, too. So that's a bit of about me. I got started after a long track record in sales and marketing in corporate life, and I was sales, everything. I ultimately left the corporate job in 1997, where I was a VP of sales of a small company. And that's when I decided it was time for Jan to find out what is she passionate about. And in turn, that's what I've been helping others to do in my perfect customer career.
Great. And we'll get into in how the transition, the switch, and how that reframing how we think about things in your work will help our listeners as well. So thanks, Jan, on that. And we'll go a little bit further. So, Alan, how did you fit into this picture? And what happened here? And how did this connection or attraction occur?
Well, it's an amazing story, really. Looking back on it and seeing the incredible synchronicities, I was actually director of sales and marketing for a small telecommunications company in the Midwest, and living in this small town in Iowa, and my friend Janet and I were driving to Iowa City one day, and we're in the car, and she's just busy on the phone with her ex-husband. She was working with Mark Victor Hansen and Robert Allen on their book, The 1 Minute Millionaire, and to keep me busy, she hands me this book. It's a galley copy of Attracting Perfect Customers, The Power of Strategic Synchronicity. And I remember looking at that subtitle and thinking, that's interesting. So I started thumbing through the book. And after about 20 minutes of reading this book, there's a little break in the action over there with Janet. And I look over at her and I go, wow, this is what I've wanted to do all my life.
And that led to what? Now, by the way, does Janet's last name start with F?
Her last name is Atwood, Janet Atwood. She's
Janet Atwood, of course. Okay.
Author of The Passion Test, New York Times bestseller.
And, of course, I worked with Janet in doing speaking, and that's where I actually Jan and I met, was through the Millionaire Eagles Club.
Program.
Was that what it was?
That was it.
That was it.
Eagles, yeah.
So a small world, Alan. So then you got this book, then what happened?
I did what?
I said, you got a hold of this galley book, and then what did you
yeah.
do? What occurred?
So Janet, being a smart young lass, she says, well, I'm going to a training with them down in Houston next month. Why don't you come with me? And so I did. And that's how I met Jan, and I learned the process. And interestingly enough, I took the process back to where I was working, and the head of the department and I worked with the 32 salespeople there, and we created a referral program based on the principles that are in Jan's book that actually, one of the statistics we tracked was cost per closed lead. And we decreased the cost per closed lead from $400 to $2.
Wow.
Yeah. And as a result, partially of our success, the company got bought out. And so I got a little message from the universe, you know, a little tap on the shoulder that said, hey, it's time for you to go do what you've always wanted to do all your life.
which is what, Alan?
I'm a FedEx envelope with a pink slip in it. So the next thing I called Jan, I said, geez, you know, I've been sharing this process with people all over, my friends, entrepreneurs, you know, business people. And it works for everybody I share with. I'd like to start, you know, doing that. And so she said, well, why don't you do that with Perfect Customers? And so I did. And the rest is, as they say, history. And here I am.
And here you are, both of
yeah.
you together and going from there. I want to back up just a step, because one of the things that's happening is, you know, the marketplace, and no matter when people are listening to this, this statement will be true. The marketplace is in turmoil. There's pressure on everybody to be able to kind of achieve and do different things. And we'll get into your system here in a minute. But what is it that is, in your opinion, that's really hindering and blocking people to have just breakthrough results? What is the old thinking that's getting people stuck that they need to let go of before we kind of get into what your process is? And Alan, I'm kind of curious about, you said you went from $400 to $2 a lead. What is it that you changed or you adjusted so that you could have this kind of success? And the listeners here, this could apply to anything, right? It's not just business. It could be any kind of nonprofit organization wanting to get more members or whatever.
That's right.
Let's just start with that, Alan, as far as what was the shift in mindset, and then I'll come to you, Jan, on that, and then we'll go into your process and just how powerful this can be for people.
Well, that, you know, the shift in mindset was that the distinction I got from attracting perfect customers, which was marketing is building relationship. And so when I came back, the head of the department and I got together, and we came up with this really simple system. It seems real simple. It was a conversational structure that the 32 salespeople we had in our office would be able to have with their customers that would build relationship. And so what happened was...
sorry to interrupt, but what did you stop doing to move towards that? In other words, what was it that you were doing that wasn't working
well? Well, there was a number of things. One, we weren't in relationship with our customers.
So we were thinking transactional, we're not
thinking...
Yeah,
just get the deal closed, get on to the next customer.
Okay.
So we added a little piece at the end of every sales conversation that allowed each salesperson to literally build relationship. I mean, it worked so well, Ken, that... we had customers calling in asking our salespeople, well, who do you buy your life insurance from?
Well, and so if you are you permitted to share with us what that piece was in philosophy, maybe not specific content, but
well,
to help our listeners?
Actually, it was really simple. What we did was we went to the IT department. We created something that allowed us to give you a 2% credit on anyone. If you brought someone who had a $100 phone bill, you got a credit on your phone bill equal to 2% of whatever their phone bill was. Mm. And so the conversation was, hey, you know, if you know somebody who wants to save money on their long distance, you know, here's a way that you can have them do it. And so what that all that did was, it was just something. It doesn't have to be anything. It's just some little thank you. But it now puts me in relationship with you. in a much different way, so that you're now having enrollment conversations about my product and service and about me. I had this one perfect customer who said, "Oh, Alan, I'll have 250 new customers for you tomorrow." And I thought, yeah, okay. The next day there was 150 letters of authorization in my fax machine. The day after that, another 150.
Wow.
Now, that guy was my perfect customer. And interestingly enough, the training that I went to in Houston with Jan, that fella, Day-Day, became sort of my model of who was my perfect customer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, it's about building relationship, and all you have to do is have a conversational structure that allows your salesperson to be in relationship with whoever's on the phone with them.
Imagine that, to actually have a conversation with somebody.
Yeah.
I'm being facetious, of course, is that so many times we get these telemarketers, and I always mess with them because I get them off the script, and now they actually don't even know what to say. And I said, where were you born? Well, hang on. That's not in the script. You're not supposed to ask me where I was born. Where am I calling from? Whatever. And so have a conversation with. So that's awesome. So Jan, thanks, Al. So Jan, what do you think we have to let go of in your experience that's out there that's really, again, blocking people's intention? You know, nobody wakes up in the morning, maybe there are some, but really want to fail. But there are many who are really toiling and struggling, and it's just hard work, and it's not fun for them. So what's their attitude or what's going on in their head that they need to let go of?
I would say they need to let go of going outside themselves for what they need. That a lot of times, when I was in corporate America and I was struggling and it was hard for me and I wasn't getting what I needed, I thought that I had to have the corporate job to pay the bills. I thought I had to have the corporate job to give me the credibility. I thought I had to have the corporate job to really determine who I was in the world. And for me, I was sacrificing a lot for those things. And what I was sacrificing was my own personal joy. I was sacrificing my belief system. I was sacrificing my health. I wasn't, you know, if I was making millions of dollars, it might have been different, but I was making a good income, and what would be considered a really, you know, great six-figure income. However, it got to a point where it just wasn't worth it anymore to me to sacrifice. The cost had become too high, and the benefits that I was getting wasn't worth it. And I felt I was worth it. I was more important. That was the shift. And so I'd say at some point, if somebody's having that same experience inside of a organization or a company or even a relationship, that when the cost gets so high that you're losing your life force, and you have to ask yourself, is it worth sacrificing my own personal life force to, and the answer, it needs to be no, but until I can get to that place, I'm not going to be ready to let go and really go for what I want. And so that's a personal journey. And so that's what I would say if anybody's in that situation like I was, that you have to get to that point where you say, I'm more important and go for me.
And, you know, one of the things that I say in my book, which just supports that, is, and it's not from a self-centered point of view, it's from a self-honoring point of view. And so, you know, that's so powerful that there are many people out there, they're stuck. And so what does it do to our energy when you describe when people are stuck in these places? How can I actually contribute at the highest level if I'm in this place of frustration or values misalignment or whatever the case might be? So it's what you're saying is that we just need to take the steps to be in a place that really honors kind of where we need to be. And not to be judgmental towards anybody else, but just to kind of be in that space.
That's right.
Yeah, that's it. Interesting, your book, Why Aren't You More Like Me? You have a quote there, "Only through the awareness of our own distinctiveness can we live our lives intentionally and purposefully and take the appropriate action."
And so intentionality is one of your favorite coins and as far as pieces about it. And so let's transition, if we may, and then, just interject either of you as we have this dialogue and conversation of, what's most valuable for the individuals there. But Jan, you put together a process, and then Alan, now you've kind of contributed to it. And we've now used this process for over 10 years as part of our training of entrepreneurs and individuals of the attracting perfect customer steps. So help us to understand sort of where this came out of, and then let's just go through the steps one by one, if we may, just to frame out for the listeners. And then if they want to go get your book, Attracting Perfect Customers, or Being Attraction book, whatever one is appropriate, then they may do that, and you can give them, the directions to do so. So tell us about the transition into now really an alternative way of thinking about it, though most of us probably intuitively know that this is just resonates for us anyways. So just frame that out for us, Jan and Alan, as far as the steps, and let's just start with them.
I would be happy to do that. And the first step in the strategic attraction planning process is to determine the kind of relationship that I'd like to attract. So in this interview, we're just going to use the type of relationship as a customer just for ease sake. However, if there's some other kind of relationship that you prefer to call this, whether it's in business, a business partnership, an investor partner relationship, a banking relationship, it could be any kind of relationship, or it can apply to a personal relationship as well. But for today, I'm just going to refer to it as the customer relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So the first part of the plan is to describe the qualities, characteristics, and attributes of a perfect customer for me. So in other words, for me, I would describe a perfect customer as fun, loves my work, has read my books, hears about me through the internet, or is referred by one of our loyal raving fans. They are people who have a contribution that they want to make to the world. They are usually a small business owner. Those are just some of the things that I would say about my perfect customer. And so that's the idea. And this part of the plan is to just make a list of those kind of qualities, characteristics, and attributes that would describe someone. And a good way to come up with your list is to think about somebody that you know and maybe just think about, what is it I like about them? What is it that has me when they see they're calling in on the phone that I'm excited, I can't wait to talk to them? And then write those things down, because that this part of the list is intended to be longer than maybe some of the other parts of our plan. And it's help you become clear and focused about what is a perfect fit for me.
Yeah, this is really the piece of that resonated for me in the subtitle of the book, The Power of Strategic Synchronicity. And this is where we begin to get strategic about synchronicity showing up. I mean, synchronicity is around us all the time. But when we get really strategic about it, it's amazing how many synchronicities show up. So this first step of the plan, people have, this is where they get amazing results, in as little as 48 hours. Just the idea of being strategic about what are the qualities, characteristics, and attributes of a customer that would be a perfect fit for me. I mean, you'd be amazed how many people have never even thought that, oh, you mean I get to say what that is? And when you shift that mindset and become aware There's another quote in your book, you know, when you become aware, you cease being a victim of your circumstances, you own your own space, and that's what happens with this planning process. You begin to step very easily into taking responsibility for, well, what would a perfect customer look like for me?
It's interesting, and I just share the experience we've had with using this process for years with clients, is that, Alan's a very good point. There are many people in our certifications where the thought had never occurred to them that they could even do this. We do a fair amount of work in ministries, and so one of the pastors would say, I can actually do this? Am I allowed to kind of actually say, felt, well, I'm being judgmental? And I said, well, I think you're actually being more selective about who you will be able to best serve.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, to get that, you know, here I was coming from a corporate environment, and when I, for myself, got this, you mean I get to say so? I have to tell you, Ken, it was, one of the most powerful experiences I'd ever experienced, that I actually get to create. And when I started doing that, what started showing up in my life was absolutely amazing.
So, Jan and Alan, what happens to those of us that don't take the time to do this? What's happening to us when we don't do this step of identifying the kind of qualities and characteristics and attributes of a perfect customer, employee, mate? What's then happening to us in the marketplace or in our lives?
Well, you've heard of the 80-20 rule, right? So in the 80-20 rule, we end up having 80% of our business from 20% of our possible clientele, right? And did I say that right?
Yes.
Okay. All of a sudden I went, oh, I'm not sure I said that right. Anyway, well, what's possible, what we have thought in the past, that's traditionally what most companies or business owners think of before they do this kind of a process, is that I have to settle and put up with the percentage of clientele that I don't really enjoy. And I just get the side benefit that, oh, at least I have the 20% that I do enjoy. And so what I figured out a long time ago is that, no, I don't want to settle for putting up with the people that complain, putting up with the people that cost me a lot of money in my business because I'm trying to make them happy, but I never can. Rather than putting up with that, I decided a long time ago, no, I'm just going to work with 100% of my clients being the kind of people that I enjoy working with, and that's what this part of the plan is intended to do. It's intended to turn those statistics around of 80-20 to being 100-100, that 100% of my clients are 100% perfect for me all the time.
Wow. Is that, now, let me be an advocate on behalf of a listener who is thinking, is that really reasonable, Jan? Is that really practical for me?
Well, let's get reasonable.
Let's get real. So tell me about that when people push back on that.
I can say that with 100% conviction that all of my clients are perfect, and I'll tell you why. Is that
perfect fit for me?
Yes, they're a perfect fit for me, and I'll tell you why. Is that in the law of attraction, that by virtue of the law of attraction, that like attracts like, I will draw to me those kind of clients that are similar or like-minded, like-hearted. That's what the law of attraction says. And it's true that even the people that I attract that I call less than perfect, somehow they are still a perfect fit for me, because if I'm drawing to me a situation that I don't like, that client is showing me something. That situation is saying, hey, Jan, you drew this in. Why? What had you attracted? And that gives me an opportunity to look inside of myself and say, hey, that's really true. I did. I drew that situation in. What's going on with me that I haven't really been specific about? I haven't clarified that I want. I haven't gotten clarity or clear thinking about some aspect of my client relationships that has that situation showing up for me. So that's why I can say with total conviction that it is possible to have 100% of my clients being 100% perfect fit for me. And I also take 100% responsibility that I am the point of attraction for everything in my life. And that's the other part of what makes this plan really powerful, is that I get to say how it goes. Even when it's not going the way that I want, I still get to say, wow, yeah, I attract that. I get it. And it gives me an opportunity to be more specific next time and say, wow, that wasn't really perfect for me. However, in the future, here's what I do want. And that's what I'm all about, is this attraction plan is helping us to all use every situation as a learning opportunity.
Yeah, and that's where your point about being awake and aware of what's perfect for me is so valuable, because what some people do is they think that perfect, because they're coming from that place of looking outside of myself and thinking that, there should be a customer who is perfect, you know, and there's no such thing. There's no such thing as a perfect person, probably never will be. But it's a matter of whether that person is a perfect fit for me, as Jan said, and it's becoming that awakening and awareness, that self-awareness of what's perfect fit for me. That's where the power lies.
You know, it's interesting, as you reflect on that and just the growth that all of us have been through. And, you know, I've been in this industry just hitting 25 years this year. I started when I was 3, just so you know.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought, is that, the old saying that life is a mirror is what you're talking about. And if there are some people that we are attracting or businesses, and I'll share a personal story and how your work helped us, and just so you know, I'm still vetting this, but it was really around suppliers for us and what was happening. And this is what I was saying, but I didn't realize that I actually was, by saying this, I was manifesting the people I actually didn't want. So, and I said, you know what? I can never find anybody reliable in the web development area.
Mm.
And so I was, everybody's flaky out there.
Right.
So my whole demeanor and my attitude and my focus was, okay, they're just flaky people. Well, guess who I got? It's flaky people, because that's what I believed was out there, rather than just framing that, you know, if there is one web company that's reliable and capable, then I am going to attract them. Then that's who I want to work with.
That's
versus
great.
Putting
it
in my space
one.
That everybody is flaky, even though, you know, and so it was true. So I had to learn about myself and my own sort of belief systems and my own sort of energy and thoughts about this. So can you guys share any stories about that as well? Alan, you're laughing there, so chime in with what you were thinking.
Well, just I wanted to tag on to that is that one of the things we have in our book is that be careful what you think, because you think it into being real. And so that's what you're describing there, is that your experience became real because you thought it so many times. So the good news about that is if you notice that it is becoming real, and you did, I heard that in your story, and I heard how you also changed the direction to go in a different way once you realized you were the center of that attraction.
Yeah, one of the other pieces that is really a challenge is the fact that many web designers out there really are flaky. And so, and the truth is, it's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant because why?
It's irrelevant because of what Jan just said, because I'm going to attract what I want. Like you said, if what you said, Ken, was perfect. You only need one non-flaky, one person who fits the criteria that you want. So you do your strategic attraction plan, attracting your perfect web developer, and that's who you attract. It's irrelevant of how many out there don't fit that plan.
And this can happen for employees, too, saying, you know what, you can't get any good help out there.
Yes.
And so as a person who teaches other people how to hire, you know, even our framing and our mindset, and you know, we'll get into some other stuff here in a minute. I suspect we could go much longer than we have planned, but you know, we can do these things in any relationship, personal relationships too,
yeah,
where we only
like
focus on the negative of the other person versus the positive.
That's like saying there's no good men out there. I've heard that from people in the dating arena. So, yeah, I think you're right. We could talk about this one topic just as our only thing. However, let's move on to the second step of the strategic attraction plan. How does that sound?
Super. So number one is I identify the qualities, the characteristics, the attributes, and I'm the person who is creating that list, and it's really – and do I vet that? I just kind of fine-tune that over time as I continue to kind of develop and get clear about
it. Yeah, just describe it, be descriptive. The more description that you can give to what you want in part number one, the better. So the universe likes to, you know, if I was going to mail an envelope to you and I just put your name on the envelope, chances are you wouldn't get it, right? So the universe likes the address to deliver the mail, and that's what we're talking about here. Be specific and really describe what it is you want on these qualities, characteristics, and attributes.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So now step number two, Jan.
Yeah, step number two. Yeah, it's a little bit different in that it's not a long list like part number one is. It's a succinct statement. And so this is the title of step number two, identify what makes me and my perfect customers tick. So again, identify what makes me and my perfect customers tick. And in my book, this is where all relationships may transform and turn the corner to be a perfect fit or one that you let go of. And so when I get clear about what my purpose is, the reason for being, the big why, my passion, what gets me out of bed in the morning, these are all different ways of saying what makes me tick. When I get clear that what makes me tick is also what makes the people that I draw to me tick, then and only then will I realize there's something bigger in the relationship. I may not have put it to words yet, but there's something in every one of those significant relationships that you enjoy the most that is common. And a lot of people in business, they don't sit down and say, hey, I can't do business with you till I know what makes you tick. That's not really the conversation. However, when I identify what makes me tick, I could start to hear it in conversations with people that I was most drawn to. So that's what part number two is all about, is identifying in a statement about what it is for me that makes my life so rewarding, so valuable, so you know, just my reason for living comes true when I put words to this part of my life.
And it's interesting, Jan. My daughter is 16, and so she doesn't actually know the word "what makes me tick."
Right.
So it's a generational thing. Dad, you have that as a quote on your book, and somebody says, helping people understand what makes them tick. Says, what is that? And so would we say that it's really this underlying sort of core belief systems? It's our foundational understanding of why we're here, our meaning in life, what our core contribution is, you know, that I do purpose work. So is this really kind of around my purpose? It's around my vision, my mission sort of elements of life?
It is. It really is. It's all of those things wrapped up in a bow. We just call it what makes you tick. You could call it my big why, my purpose, my passion, my mission of service, all those things that you just mentioned. It is your core belief that without that core belief, you're just lost at sea, so to speak.
Anything you want to add to that, Alan?
Boy, this one question, when I came to that training in Houston so long ago, I remember standing there. Here I was steeped in corporate life. And this was not a question that I ever really thought about. what makes me tick. So I remember standing there, and Jan asked me something that really opened it up for me. She said, "Well, do you have any perfect customers?" And I said, "Yeah," because I was thinking about this guy, Day-Day, that I mentioned earlier. And she says, "Well, what do you think makes him tick?" And that opened up for me the possibility to see, because I could really relate to what made him tick. I mean, this was a guy who'd come over from Albania. He worked to help people emigrate into the United States. He found them a place to live, got them a job, even got them long-distance telephone service, et cetera. This is a guy who really cared about people. And he had a family, you know, and he was a family man. And so as I looked at him, I realized that what made him tick was also what made me tick.
It's just that service and helping others and just committing to benefacting humanity overall and other individuals around.
Yeah, so being able to wordsmith that into a statement is what then allowed me to turn on my lighthouse so that I began attracting more people. Like Dede, who sent me a total of 300 letters of authorization in 2 days.
It is amazing, though, as you do your work and we do our work, how many people don't have an answer to that question and how foundational it is to them for them to have fulfillment in life.
Yeah, that's really one of the values of this planning process is you know, it's doing the planning that you need to be successful. And, you know, when you do a lot of planning, you'll be successful. And if you do none at all, you know, what is it, that the movie What the Bleep Do I Know? Do We Know? And the guy says, "Well, I plan my day because if I don't plan it, somebody else will."
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. The one thing that I've liked in real support of your system, Jan and Ellen, is that it's simple. There are some that get so long, so burdensome, so overwhelming that nobody can use it. But this does not have to be hard. In fact, it really should be easy when you're kind of in your space or in the zone of what's important to you. It should not be burdensome. It might be work to start with, because people that don't ask this question, all of a sudden they've lived at a saran wrap thin kind of or thick life. They have to go deeper, and that might be something that's uncomfortable to start with. But it is a very simple process, Jan, that's been, you know, for people to get connected.
I've written attraction plans on a cocktail napkin. So they don't have to be elaborate. They don't have to be done in the computer. There's not a magic to it. There is kind of a magic that seems like happens after you get clear and specific about what it is you want. That's where the magic really occurs. And so it's not the form necessarily, it's the thought process. And once you've done a bazillion strategic attraction plans, it's not even about writing it down. It's about a way of thinking. It's about, it really truly becomes integrated as a way of life.
Yeah, so getting what makes me tick, we could say, Ken, is... is wordsmithing in a brief statement what my personal style is. You know, your natural predisposition. You were born that way to perceive, approach, and interact with the environment. Your environment includes time, people, tasks, and situations.
Well, you have the book right there, Alan.
I do.
Well, I just wanted to share what makes Alan and I tick together. And this was one of the things when we wrote a book together, we realized we had a something that we ticked together about that has had us come together in the first place, more than likely. And what makes us tick is working with people to discover a deeper connection to themselves to create heart-centered businesses and lives. And so it's that deeper connection that we enjoy. We love helping people to go on that journey and to discover what are the right words, what are the words I resonate with that really describe my deeper connection to my business. So.
And that's what makes us stick, and that's what makes our perfect customers become lucrative, loyal, raving fans.
As you expect that.
Yeah, it's just it's a natural law.
They
well,
fall
that's
in love
awesome.
With us.
They fall in love with us.
And if we don't go faster, then we might attract a time limit. So, and I say that with Jess because it's so powerful that, you know, you can spend lots of description in it. So, you know, first of all, we do the attributes and characteristics and qualities. Then we kind of get into that core sort of belief system, what makes me tick, what am I about at the center core, which is an active statement. And then from there, something that's unique in your system, step number three for you, is what does your perfect customer expect of you? And so you don't see that in other pieces. So what does that mean? What does my customer expect from me? It's almost like kind of like a double play on words. So help us understand I need to be doing with that.
Yeah, step number three is just a real tweak in how you're saying that, I think, Ken, is important, is that it's to specify what I want my perfect customers to expect of me. And I say an emphasis on the words I want. So we're back to what's perfect for me. And step number three, let me just give you an example of the contrast, is that in traditional cultures, let's say, the way we traditionally might have been taught or think, is I've got to fulfill the expectations I think others have for me. So it's kind of like if your parents wanted you to be a doctor, your expectation is they want you to be a doctor, then you go out to be a doctor to fulfill on their expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Only to find out your parents were thinking, gosh, we just wanted you to be happy. And that's kind of what happens here, is it when I specify what I want my perfect customers to expect of me, it's a list of what I want my perfect customers who are wanting me to have what I want. My perfect customers want me to have what I want. Now the question is, so what do I want? So that includes everything from the hours of my business operations. It includes the amount of income I want my perfect customers to expect me to have. It could be anything. It could be how many vacations a year I take, what kind of car I drive, the kind of house I live in, the city I live in. It could be whether I have a website or whether I advertise in a magazine. It's what do I want? It's all about me saying, again, what do I want my perfect customers to expect of me? And it's also about shifting whenever things aren't, you know, when we had this earlier conversation about whether it could actually be said that 100% clients are 100% perfect for me. Part number three is where I take full responsibility for attracting every situation, even if it's less than perfect for me. And part number three is where I turn that around. So, for example, if let's say that I attracted a slow-paying client or someone who's not paying me, which isn't perfect, right? It's
right.
Not what we want. So, but again, it's happening, and I attracted it. So in part number three, I would ask myself, what do I want my perfect customers to expect of me when they're not paying on time? What do I want them to expect of me when they haven't paid their bill? And then they put the answer on part number three. And that tells me how I'm being responsible. Would I want them to send them another bill? Would I want them to want me to be caring and compassionate? Would I want them to have me be, you know, like a Guido with a big club in my hand, beat them over the head for it? Would I want them to
want me to schedule a
meeting? And would I want to offer them a way to rearrange their agreement? And so this is what part number three is about. It's me really becoming 100% responsible for all of my outcomes. Would the perfect client, would I want my perfect client when they don't pay their bill for me to let them go? That's, you know, that's only a question me as a business owner can answer. There's no expectations. There's no rule book written on it. It's coming from inside of me. So that's how part number three is also a very transformative part to the plan.
I had a very powerful awakening experience, again, at this training in Houston that I did when I realized that I had on my plan, because I was steeped in corporate life, that I want my my customers to expect me to return their call within an hour. Well, I had 2,500 customers and 32 salespeople. So in that moment when Jan was asked me, is that what you really want? I had this, like, it was like an epiphany. I said, no, I want my perfect customers to expect me to return their call when it's perfect for me, because I got, that's what they want.
So, I mean, I think let's just spend a couple of minutes in here, because it could get confusing for people if they're not clearly thinking, you know, exactly what you're wanting them to do here. Because I think when I first started it here that I was maybe getting misled as myself as far as exactly what I wanted to list. And it, one of the items that's on our list is that our perfect customers expect us to charge what we're worth, and to not devalue, you know, our speaking or our training or those pieces there. So what other examples could you give us so that this can have that practical application to maybe break free how they others might think about it? And I think that was a very good example, Ellen. Anything else that either of you have to help us get locked in here, what you want your perfect customer to expect of you?
Well, I think what you just said, Ken, is a perfect example, because you want that.
Yes. I want to charge what I'm worth. Absolutely.
Yes, I want that.
Yeah, I agree that everyone in business wants to be paid. I mean, that's we have our proverbial butt on the line for the commitments we've made, and we deserve to be paid. And my perfect customers want me to be paid too. I think I need to remember that. Is that they want to pay me. Now, if they're not paying, what do I want to do in that situation? Another example is my perfect customers want me to be 100% at my best. So when I am not feeling well, let's say if I'm under the weather or, you know, run down or whatever, not feeling my 100% best, I need to let them know and reschedule an appointment perhaps. Or I want my perfect customers to expect me that on Fridays, that's a Jan day. And I started that almost 13 years ago. Friday is Jan's day to do whatever she wants. Sometimes I catch up on paperwork, but most of the time it's spent out in the sunshine or getting a massage or going to do something personal that really helps me to be more rejuvenated at the end of a week. So that's what this part of the plan is about, is to use this part of the plan to say what's perfect for me and what do I want.
Yeah, you'd be amazed when they say about I want my perfect customers to expect me to be 100% available. So I take care of myself is that one part.
No, I didn't say available.
100%. What's
feeling 100%.
Feeling 100%. So, when I reschedule, when I discover that I'm not 100% and I reschedule an appointment, it's amazing how the response is, oh, that's perfect. So it always turns out that what's perfect for me turns out is perfect for them, even if it's around rescheduling an appointment.
I don't have it right in front of me, but I know one of our statements is that our customers expect us to live a balanced life. And, of course, we get to define balance. But, you know, if Ken's going on holidays, they're not, or vacation, then he's not being seen as, okay, what's he going away for again? Oh, good for him. He's been working hard. He needs to take more of those.
Yes.
Right. So, we don't need any martyrs. Nobody really appreciates it anyway. So.
But it's just interesting as you frame that out, as that expecting those pieces there and just being clear with that. So now we've got three steps, you know, describing the characteristics and qualities, really understanding the core beliefs or what makes me tick. Now specifying, you know, what you want your perfect customer to expect from you. So it's almost like a double thing, what is in their mind about us. But let's go to the sort of the last, that's not the last because you've added another step, but step number four is, and how we frame it, so correct me if I'm wrong, is that, you know, what do we need to become to be able to attract that kind of person? Or what do we, as you put now in your statements here, what do I need to be? And we've also framed out so become. So what does that mean? Is that what's the step here of what do I need to be or become to attract the kind of individuals or organizations that we've framed out?
Well, the step number four is about a declaration, and it's a statement, you know, like our forefathers in the United States say, we have a Declaration of Independence that says, this shall be. So that's what I'm referring to when I think about a declaration. And this step number four is like that, in that I am declaring who I'm going to be being to attract what I say I want, what I've written on my plan. And what that means is, many times we think, if I want my business to succeed, I need to jump into do, you know, get the business going, right? Take action. Yet I haven't really created who I'm going to be being that is in alignment with my bigger vision for where I want my business to go. So what's taking place could be taking actions from a less powerful place. And so part number four is about first creating the powerful statement of who I'm going to be being, who I'm going to be interacting with people from a place of a powerful business owner, the owner of a multi-million dollar business, to be being a one of my favorite being statements is that I'm a savvy goddess of business. And when I created that being statement as my declaration, it gave me a personal, it made me kind of smile because I like thinking of myself as a goddess. And to think of myself as a goddess of business was fun, and it gave me a particular kind of being of who I really am, is I'm a fun person. When you do business with me, you're going to have fun. And I'm a kind of a feisty gal. When you do business with me, you're going to get a little bit of that too, and people love that. And so that's what this part number four is about, is creating your declaration, and it comes moment to moment. Because let's face it, not every day do I bounce out of bed going, yippee, I'm this savvy goddess business. That may not be, especially after I fell last weekend and my foot hurt. I wasn't jumping out of bed and doing anything but moaning and groaning. So in those times when it's important for me to show up and be seen by my public, I want them to see me in a certain way. And I can shift my being from one of poor, pitiful me to one of power, the powerful person that I really am, by creating these declarations or a statement of being. And you can do it moment to moment. You can have one every hour if you want. It's
moment
totally,
to moment,
it's
yeah.
It's totally a creation to intended to inspire and empower yourself.
Yeah, it's in alignment with your chapter 14, Ken, your book, Style Shifting is Foundational to Your Success. You have a great quote by William James that really expresses the power of this step. It says, human beings, by changing the inner attitudes of their minds, can change the outer aspects of their lives. And that's exactly what happens.
It does, doesn't it? So what would be, Alan, give us a couple of practical examples for you about being and what somebody might put on this list or this declaration of intent.
You know, for me, one of the things that I love is really connecting people, connecting with people, and I call myself the cosmic connector. And so that's a being that I have. I'm being cosmic connector, connecting you with, you know, with some of our loyal raving fans. You know, just that somehow that connection, you know, the connection, the reconnection that we made here. With you as one of our loyal raving fans. So for me, my being, one of my beings is being cosmic connector. And for me, that means something. That has a, you know, I could write a whole, you know, 5 pages of what that means for me. But it's just a little fun way of expressing that's who I'm being.
Now, let me ask you a question, and this will be from a client point of view who's used the materials. Can I use this step in a sort of an organizational perspective versus an individual? In other words, if we're talking about, you know, our company, CRG, which has a group of individuals, can I use that declaration to really speak about what the company's about versus just an individual? Can I use it that way or not?
Yeah, because it's kind of like what makes us tick. Jan and I each have an individual statement. We have one that works for us together. So your company is, like you said, it's a collection of individuals.
Yeah. Here's my advice on
people.
That. My advice on that that I found is that in the step number 2, where you identify what makes you tick, you can identify that for yourself. You can also identify that for a group such as a company.
Mm-hmm.
And that stays consistent. That's just like the thread that runs through everything you're involved in. Whereas part number 4 on the declaration of being, that is a moment-to-moment thing. It's intended to shift from one state of being to another. In other words, let's say that the being who I'm being, like I used the example when I bruised my foot last weekend and I was being kind of sad and pitiful, that just wasn't going to get me at the results in life that I wanted. So I shifted this week so I could get kind of back up on my feet, metaphorically and literally, and be the person that I wanted to be and fulfill on the appointments that I had on my calendar. It required a being shift. And so that was moment to moment. So that's how I would really explain to you, can a company do this? Yes, you can. And you can play with both having a consistent statement, such as what makes you and your company tick, and having those maybe a whole brainstorming with your employees about all the different beings you could be being, and then you put them all in a bowl and pick one. You know, write them all down on a piece of paper, put them in a bowl and say, hey, I need a new being. The one I'm doing sucks. So
I need to shift the outer aspects of my life. Well, I do that by changing the inner attitude of my mind. Mm-hmm. And that comes from establishing a being.
Maybe it's just me not being judgmental. It's me being accepting and not... doing something like that where
I'm
get critical
accepting.
Towards others and then I dislike other people who are critical towards me. And it's fun. I wonder how that showed up.
Interesting to notice. Good to know.
So it's an important step to be, I would suggest, highly reflective on and thoughtful on as far as what that means to individuals and to be careful of that. Now, I've used this, and Jan, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but sometimes I frame this out with your work when we work with others, is that I make the statement, as much as being, I says, who do you need to become to attract the people that you want to have? And it's just really, I mean, it is the, maybe not an end game, but, you know, I have to become... this level. So if I'm worthy of these multi-million-dollar kind of clients that are working on that, then what is it that's in me that I need to develop so that those kinds of people even want to hang out with me?
Right.
And
yeah.
So
it,
I think that's we frame that way. Is that okay?
Oh, that's perfect. Yes. If I want my business to earn multi-million-dollar revenues this year, I have to see myself as being someone who owns a company that does that. It's kind of simple. It's kind of like who's buried in Grant's tomb. Me.
And who is buried
there?
Grant. It's so simple. It's just like that.
Yeah, so I really have these hard questions. Exactly. Just, you know, a lot of times it's interesting as we work with different individuals across the world how people miss that and said, in our mind we're saying, do you really know how unattractive you are as far as how you're conducting yourself and the behaviors? And it's not a surprise to us. It's that old, you know, my image in the book there, we talked about square wheels on wagons, right? Where
right.
the round wheels are right there, it's obvious to those of us, but it's not mm-hmm. obvious necessarily to other people
yeah.
that you have really put your own sort of square wheels on the wagon yourself as part of that. So that's awesome. Now,
and that means you can take them off and put the round ones on.
But, of course, you have to choose to do it, don't you?
You have to choose
have
to do it. You have to be awake
choice.
And aware that
yeah.
you got square wheels.
That's a part of that. Now, our work has only included those step four, but now you've added another step to this process to kind of bring an additional sort of bow or activation of it. So just tell us about what step number five is for people and how to go about it.
Yeah, this is the part that I think will kickstart everything for you that you've written on your plan so far. So here's your big reveal, is that step number five, take attractive actions versus dazzling distractions. And an attractive action to us is one that's in alignment with what you've written on your plan. It's in alignment with who you're being. It's in alignment with what makes you tick. And when I take an attractive action, it's something that resonates for me in a feeling and in an emotion, such as I feel good. It just feels right. When I do an action that is a dazzling distraction, it takes me off my course. It takes me away from my original plan. And usually those kind of actions are the ones that seem too good to be true. Oh, yeah, that's going to, like, make me rich overnight, right? Or it's something that you knew kind of when you first heard about it that it didn't seem quite right, but you were going to take a big risk. Yet those are the kind of actions that when I take them are the ones I wake up at 2 a.m. going, oh, my gosh, what have I done? So that could be a dazzling distraction, taking you away from where you really need to be focused. But an attractive action is always one that feels right to you. And you don't wake up at 2 a.m. obsessing about if you made the right choice or not. You may wake up at 2 a.m. and go with a big smile on your face and go, yeah, I knew that was it. That was it for me. And it doesn't matter if it's right for anybody else. If it's right for you, that's the attractive action. And sometimes that is the challenge, because a dazzling distraction sometimes is influenced by other people who say, yeah, Jan, come on. We're all jumping into this off this 50-foot cliff, and we're going to have fun doing it, and you will too. Yet I'm over here going, yeah, well, I don't know. Something didn't feel quite right about it. So that's what I would say. Take actions, number one.
Because that's the action is actually the antidote, and it also gives you access for what Jan's talking about around identifying the distinction between an attractive action and a dazzling distraction. Because you'll save a lot more time now that you've got this process, that even if you do take an inappropriate action, a dazzling distraction, you'll know it much more quickly.
So help us to understand how this might be slightly different than just your sort of standard list of making a list of goals. I know you have that down on your sheet and in your framework is, you know, I'm making some goals. But how does that attractive action step vary from just sort of the traditional, let's just have some goals and list them out here, or a to-do list or whatever?
I like to ask myself this question. What's the next most attractive action for me to take, moment to moment? If I ask myself that, repetitively during the day, I will stay in sync with what I've written on my plan. And how that's different is when I ask myself, what is the attractive action? If I look at my goals and my goals say something that's not really congruent with what I've written on my plan, there's not going to be a result. So in other words, if I made a promise in a sales meeting that said I'm going to have, you know, a certain number of clients by a certain number of date, producing a certain amount of number, that is totally fantasized, and it's not really possible in my inner being, then it's not going to happen. But an attractive action is one that's going to help me take the actions more on a baby step basis, perhaps, that says, pick up the phone right now. That's an attractive action. Call that person right now. And make the sales call. Use my intuition. Follow my gut. Use those kind of inner resources that we all have, that when I'm using my strategic attraction plan to refine all of those inner intuitive senses that I already know are true for me, and I follow that, then I'm not going to be led on a wild goose chase. I'm going to be in touch with what's so, what's real, what's authentic, and it's going to feel right for me. Whereas somebody else may, you know, kind of, you know, throw out something that sounds like the too much too soon kind of a deal. That isn't, that's useless to me. And so your strategic attraction plan is different because you're going to set goals in the first place that are realistic, that are achievable, that can be done. And you're going to put in action things that will have them come around. And I'd much rather have somebody make a goal that is achievable than to set some unrealistic goal that they're never going to achieve. I just think that's useless. And an attraction plan is really kind of a two-step operation. It's one, using your imagination and your creativity. It's activating that part of you, that right brain part of you, that allows you to be inventive and imaginative, to have what you really want. And then the other part of it is the strategic part, the left side of your brain, that says take a baby step as your first attractive action towards having everything you say you want.
So it basically totally transforms how you relate to making lists and setting goals.
Just to support you, in my book on how to find your purpose in life, I use the word baby steps.
Oh, see, like attracts like.
But I love the movie What About Bob? And,
yes, me that, too.
That was so funny with Bill Murray.
Baby steps.
So we all have a sense of humor. Let me share a personal story that is so poignant to what you just shared.
Okay.
You know, I have a home office, which we're doing this call from, and I also have an office at work where I have all the staff and everybody are there. But the home office has kind of been in disarray for the last couple of years, and we just purged it and redid it and remodeled it, and I'm now in this beautiful office with everything set up. And I've been working from the sort of commercial office for the last 2 or 3 years, when in the past I always worked from home 1 or 2 days a week for my own personal space, for thoughts, to write, to do it. But I haven't been doing it, and it has not felt right. And so I've just been in this new office for 3 days, and already just the transformation of energy, the ability to be productive, the ability to think and to be clear about it. What is just a stupid office? I mean, it's a little, no, there's nobody here. And I've set this office up to be perfect for me in every way, just some fine tuning things. And just the awareness, just the acknowledgement that, man, the energy is so much different than being, we have an open office style at CRG. And I just said, you know, I had underestimated the impact that that environment was having on my creativity and my ability to contribute. And I'd sort of been in denial about that for some time. And I just woke up to it really in the last couple of days about how much more powerful this is. And I'm okay to be in my space working alone with not talking to the staff or whatever for a day or two as I really let these creative juices go.
Because so, my perfect customers want me to have an office that's perfect for me.
They do, don't they?
Part three of the plan.
But that attractive step, that action step, and it took us several months to remodel and just do it and change it. But it was just something I had to do. And I said, I think sometimes people don't listen to that sort of intuitive side. There's something that we teach, and I'm not sure if it links into with yours, that procrastination in many ways is good because it tells you that something's not right. And that the environment's wrong or you're doing something that's wrong or a combination of those. And so what you're saying here is, if I'm not taking steps, that these steps really need to be in the right space for me.
There it is. If I'm not taking the steps, sometimes it's because it's not an attractive action.
And so I was just listening to that. Well, we've covered a lot of stuff. We've been, chatting for almost an hour, if you can believe that. So I just want to give the both of you an opportunity to say a couple of things. First of all, if people want to learn more about your work, where would they go to figure out about that or to your book and just, the books that you have available? Just share with the listening audience where would they go to kind of find out about Jan and Alan a little bit more.
Well, the easiest place to go is our website, www.perfectcustomers.com. And, of course, the books are available at Amazon. We have links. You go to the website and in our products program, we have a link where you can buy either one of the books. But that's the place. The website is to go to get access to all of our information.
Now, Alan, help me out. Because I haven't read Being Attraction, how is that different from Attracting Perfect Customer? What is it you cover in that book that is different than the other one?
Well, there's a lot of personal stories in the book that I find that I can really relate to. Stories about, being and why being is BEE-ING because we relate to the bees because bumblebees, they're not supposed to be able to fly because their wings are too small to get their fat little bodies off the ground, but the bees fly anyway because they don't care what humans think is impossible. Well, we're like the bees. And that's what this attraction planning process allows anyone to shift their being and thereby shift their inner being and thereby shift their outer circumstances seemingly magically and defy logic.
That's awesome. Jan, any final words for the audience that just to kind of put a bow on things and to encourage them?
Well, I always say this about our books. I'll say it about The Attraction Plan. It's really not a coffee table book. It is the best way to get results from a strategic attraction plan is do one. Don't just listen to what you've heard today. Actually pick up a piece of paper and a pen and just write it out, and you'll be amazed at the magical, amazing shifts that will happen just by starting on an attraction plan. An easy, easy, easy way to do it. Even if you wrote it on a cocktail napkin, it'll work. So that's what I would say is take that attractive action and you will start attracting to you everything that you truly say you want.
Wow. And I'm just going to say to the listeners, we've used this now for 10 years in groups every single year, multiple dozens of groups that we've worked with. And you've got me excited about going back and just saying, I need to kind of revisit some of these things and fine-tune them.
Yep.
And that this is an active plan. This is not something that ever is done. You are always doing it, just as you are being it. Correct?
That's right.
Okay, so it's an active tense. And so I just want to encourage everybody to go to perfectcustomers.com and get the books and work with that. These are awesome individuals.
Yeah, there's a free report there. They can download the free report and do their own, create their own plan.
Got everything there.
Okay, well, that's super. And, one of the things just for everybody who's listening here is that, people, you deserve to have that opportunity to have a fulfilling life. And this provides a roadmap and a process and a direction and a framework for you to be able to achieve that. So, Jan and Alan, thank you very much for being on Secrets of Success and spending your time with us today. And we just, again, encourage everybody to take action on this. If you just listen to it and do nothing, then nothing will happen. And do reach out to them, because they are individuals who are approachable. And, of course, if you do call them, then obviously you're a perfect customer for them. So I just thought, so this is Ken Keith.
That's great. Thank you.
On Secrets of Success. And just thank you very much for listening. And we'll listen, or we'll have you come join us next month when we have our next guest.
Sounds great. Thank you, Ken. Loved being with you today.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Great, guys.